Redevelopment is coming to Hunter's Point, with or without the 49ers. Thank you for never smoking. The Nanny State comes to a Bay Area town. And for Bay Area basketball teams, March Madness ends early. Hello from the courtyard at the Graduate School of Journalism at UC Berkeley. Welcome to CNS News. I'm Nick Bonovich. Here are the headlines. Earlier this week, a California judge dismissed all charges against former Hewlett-Packard chairwoman Patricia Dunn. In 2006, Dunn was accused of hiring investigators to impersonate reporters and board members to obtain private phone records. The judge dismissed the charges in exchange for 96 hours of community service. He then waived the service requirement because Dunn is battling breast cancer. During the case, Dunn insisted she was not responsible for the tactics used by investigators. She could still face federal charges. Bay Area marijuana advocate Ed Rosenthal is celebrating victory tonight. For 5 years, the federal government has tried to put him in jail. Federal Judge Charles Breyer dismissed the tax evasion and money laundering charges against Rosenthal. Breyer said there was no evidence to convict him, only an apparent attempt to harass Rosenthal. The medical marijuana proponent called for the removal of the prosecutor who pursued him.
As far as George Bevin goes, he's a small man with a small mind who has bitterly opposed the will of Californians. I just don't understand how keeping a person from receiving their medicine is protecting the people of the United States. I don't get it.
Rosenthal's lawyers say the judge's decision will protect future defendants from vindictive prosecution. Rosenthal still faces charges for growing marijuana. San Francisco contractor Mike Abizade faces felony charges for swindling 4-day laborers out of thousands of dollars after they did construction work at his Bay Area firm. District Attorney Kamala Harris warned employers, saying, quote, "Those who prey on immigrant communities will be met with severe consequences." Abizade is currently free on $100,000 bail. Tensions between faculty and administrators at Cal State campuses are reaching the boiling point. The issue at hand, statewide pay increases. San Francisco State faculty had until the end of the day Thursday to vote on a proposed 2-day walkout. Teachers there are part of the largest university system in the country, 23,000 faculty and 23 campuses. Students at SF State face increases of their own. The state university trustees have already passed a 10% jump in their tuition. The 10-campus UC system also approved a 7% increase for fees for undergrads and grad students, and a 12% bump at the professional schools. Here's what students on the Berkeley campus have to say about the fee hike.
I would like it if we didn't get money taken out of our wallets anymore.
That's funny, because actually part of the mental health stress is due to the fact that the student fees are rising.
They keep increasing more fees when nothing sustainable is coming out of those.
For this kind of education, it's worth it.
I'm on financial aid right now and like an on loan, so like it's making things even more tough.
I don't really care because like my parents pay for everything anyway.
I guess it's going towards a good cause rather than going towards increasing salaries on campus.
It's kind of the government's fault for not having enough money, so they should be able to solve the problem on their own.
What I'm definitely seeing here is a lack of input from students, right? We don't have a say.
Stop raising fees, please. Thanks. What else?
Few things are bothering San Franciscans more than the possibility that the 49ers will go south to Santa Clara. But the city is already moving beyond those fears, pushing ahead with the plan for Bayview Hunter's Point. It means cleaning up toxic waste and transforming the area with or without a new stadium. Carola Mamberto was there while the city, developers, and community talked it over.
I would truly miss them if they left.
If they move, then it's going to be a commute.
They could have the place, a place like this, you know. There's some people here, you know, they're in some real rough situations.
The Santa Clara 49ers. Just the sound of it tears at the hearts of San Francisco fans. But here in Hunter's Point, there's much more than football at stake.
These incredible plans to open up 700 acres of San Francisco's waterfront, to create parks, to create affordable housing, to create jobs and economic development opportunities.
It's an ambitious plan, and it will take time. The Navy left years of toxic contamination on the property. The city plans to fast-track the cleanup to meet the 49ers' deadline in 2012.
Is it a tough schedule? Absolutely, because we're pushing in directions that people aren't typically used to pushing in.
It's all part of the effort to keep the 49ers. But with the team flirting with Santa Clara, officials say they have to look at the bigger picture.
We're not going to wait and see whether the 49ers think it's feasible to build in Santa Clara instead to move forward with these irreplaceable sites. We're going ahead now either way.
It's not clear when the 49ers will make their decision. Santa Clara may be a simpler and less expensive choice for the team, but also the biggest disappointment for their fans.
We need the 49ers here because we need the revenue. We definitely need the revenue. And we'll pack a stadium. We pack a stadium better than Oakland does.
This is Carola Mamberto for CNS News.
Down on the peninsula, a small town is looking to shield its citizens with the strictest smoking regulations in the country. Earlier this week, I checked in on Belmont.
It's a classic California suburb, and soon smoking may be against the law except in single-family homes.
Are we targeting a socioeconomic group, people that can't afford a $1 million home? My answer to that is no. N-O, no. This is about secondhand smoke. This is about the freedom to have clean, fresh air, and it's about the freedom to smoke.
But the ordinance raises a complication. Cigarettes are still for sale in Belmont.
The sales of cigarettes in California is legal, and we actually discussed that, and it's not an option to not sell cigarettes. So it's kind of an oxymoron there. You know, you can sell the cigarettes and you can't smoke them anywhere.
Some business owners are disappointed with the plan. Jennifer McSwain feels her customers will go to a town where they can drink and smoke.
Yes, I feel it's a very important issue and it should be looked at, but it should be looked at statewide so that everybody is on the same plane.
In fact, McSwain feels the whole issue has gotten out of hand.
Because at first I thought the issue was a lot of hype, and I heard so many things. They were going to ban smoking in cars while you're driving by, and they're going to ban smoking here, and they're going to ban it there, and you're not going to be allowed to, you know. So it got to the point where I was like, well, why don't you just give us all gray uniforms and turn off all music when you drive through the city of Belmont and make us all little robots.
Before the council makes a final decision, they're trying to weigh public health against liberty.
We've survived over the last decade with limiting smoking in restaurants and bars, but again, I'm concerned about people's freedoms.
The recent police crackdown on street prostitution in San Francisco has had some unanticipated consequences. Larry Santana has the story.
The streets around Pine and Hyde and Nob Hill are empty. Proof that, for the moment at least, efforts to curb prostitution seem to be working. This San Francisco neighborhood, long known for its high rate of prostitution, has become a target for increased police surveillance. But tonight, it's the police that are being watched.
Tonight we're on a police walk, and we're actually walking this neighborhood where there have been a lot of arrests lately. In the last few months, there have been about 40 arrests of mainly prostitute women.
West belongs to the U.S. Prostitutes Collective, a group that represents sex workers. She and her team of volunteer lawyers monitor police conduct they say violates the rights and endangers the lives of prostitutes.
These arrests really push women underground and make it much more dangerous for women to work.
Police, however, believe these arrests are in their best interest.
We spend our time getting them off the street, either rescuing them or getting them cited and off the street so they won't become vulnerable to the predators out there.
Kyle Kitson believes that making his presence known to police can help ensure these prostitutes are treated fairly.
Typically, when somebody knows that they're being watched, it does have a lessening impact on police to overstep their boundaries. They might be less willing to violate their rights.
But this is only part of the problem.
A person is much less likely to report sexual assault if they're afraid of being arrested or persecuted because of the stigma associated with sex work.
While the group does not advocate prostitution, it has presented the city with its ultimate solution.
While the economic necessity drives women into prostitution, there shouldn't be criminalization against sex workers.
From the empty streets of Lower Knob Hill, this is Larry Santana for CNS News.
This winter was the warmest on record. Government scientists say so. It's been great for most of us, but in Rohnert Park, it may have made a bad situation worse. Brian Pollack investigates.
On Monday, a Superior Court judge closed Abbey Chapel Mortuary for operating without a license. According to his lawyer, the funeral director, Anthony Villagiante, has checked himself into an institution to recuperate from stress.
Remember, this is a lot of stress, a lot of publicity, a lot of grief for him and for his family.
The stress came when neighbors complained of terrible smells coming from Abbey Chapel's nearby storage facility. The refrigeration unit is designed to hold three bodies. Fire officials found nine, some supposedly decomposing as the temperatures rose above the required 50 degrees.
In addition to not having the proper license, neighboring businesses complained about the inappropriateness of some of the behavior of the mortuary. Bodies were driven up here, often without tinted windows, and taken right out in full view of anyone conducting business or walking by on the street.
Cars or hearses with unloading caskets, and so I did notice that on occasion.
Investigators are scouring company records looking for more irregularities.
Cannot disclose where those places are.
It's a case the deputy district attorney already considers remarkably peculiar. However, Abbey Chapel's attorney believes the situation has been blown out of proportion.
So anything can happen to bump that up. It's almost like having a school district and then, you know, you build like 900 new homes and then the enrollment's way up and they go, oh my God, we have to build a new school. Let's go on split sessions. What are we going to do? It happens to the best of everyone. You just can't plan.
A class action lawsuit has been initiated by mortuary clients, and there are still more allegations regarding business practices. Villagiante will return to court in May to try and hold on to his business. From Santa Rosa, this is Brian Pollack, CNS News.
As the four-year anniversary of the start of the Iraq War approaches, students gathered at UC Berkeley to discuss their protest plans. The group hopes to bring returning veterans together with anti-war activists. The event was sponsored by the Berkeley Stop the War Coalition and featured students, professors, and a veteran of the Iraq War.
I don't think that students on their own can stop the war. I think that's going to take working people, and it's going to take soldiers, and it's going to take the people of Iraq and the people of the Middle East.
Smith hopes this new tactic will heighten awareness leading up to the protest planned in San Francisco on Sunday. The NCAA men's basketball tournament is upon us, and it's more than fans and players writing ups and downs. Sean Aronson headed to Palo Alto to check in on the Bay Area's only tournament team, the Stanford Cardinal.
And you could swing a guy down. And
for millions of sports fans, Thursday morning marked the start of a three-week-long party commonly called March Madness.
But I think this score.
But here on the Stanford campus, it's business as usual, despite the fact their team is playing in the tournament.
Do you have a few minutes to stop at all?
No, sorry.
Okay. Do you know about the basketball game?
No, sorry.
What about the big game today?
What's the big game today?
Just basketball.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No.
A little early in the morning for me. Yeah, very excited.
Yeah, you can.
While students may not be jumping for joy, these Stanford fans gathered at a local bar to cheer on their team.
We pay our dues, we stay loyal, and we hope for the best. I mean, we've come back from a lot of bad deficits. And
despite the score, bartenders and waitresses were happy to see the large crowd, and especially to have them eating and drinking.
Good thing, though. I'll take the business for sure.
Yeah.
Everybody's in a good mood. Seems to be a fanatical kind of day, so we're very happy with the turnout.
Well, March Madness is big business for bars like the Old Pro. It's the loss of money that concerns the American corporate world. An estimated $86 million will be lost this year to workers who are watching the tournament instead of doing their job. In order to curb the losses, businesses have begun taking action, preventing workers from accessing sports internet sites and streaming video. But it hasn't stopped these fans.
Did you have to make up an excuse to get here?
No.
Nah.
I have a cool boss.
Okay.
No, this is it. I'm working right here. I've got my BlackBerry, got my cell phone. I'm fine.
Stanford lost to Louisville in the first round, an outcome fans like Jim Rutter could foresee.
I don't want to call it a predictable outcome, but it's not that surprising.
In Palo Alto, this is Sean Aronson for CNS News.
The city of San Francisco is known for its natural beauty, its flora and fauna. Supervisors recently stepped in to preserve some of the city's most loved residents. Rob Krieger reports.
The parrots of San Francisco's historic Telegraph Hill were in danger of losing their homes, two cypress trees on private land. But this week, city supervisors passed an ordinance which would save their hilltop dwellings.
I think in this day and age, it's something that should be treasured and protected. We have a landmark tree ordinance to nominate trees that are on private property so people can't just chop trees down willy-nilly because they want to add an addition to their house.
Supervisor Dufty said that the public demanded the trees be saved.
I received 1,600 emails from people from San Francisco, from Australia, from Kobe, Japan, from Madrid, from everywhere, who have been captivated by the story of the wild parrots at Telegraph Hill.
Judy Irving's 2005 documentary about the parrots touched the hearts of the public, and so did her husband's best-selling book, which inspired the film.
The birds lose a tree here, they fly over there. They lose that tree, they fly someplace else. Pretty soon they're not going to have any place else to go, and after a while, you have to stand up and take a stand for nature because the birds don't vote.
Judy's husband, Mark Bittner, became somewhat of a local celebrity, feeding and caring for the birds.
You've got to also see the larger context, and that is that we're losing our tall trees to private property owners who are wanting to cut them down to either develop the lot or for whatever other reason.
But Supervisor Ed Ju was the only board member to oppose the ordinance. He's afraid that the rule will lead to excessive demands from private property owners.
I have nothing against the wild parrots and the trees, but I want to make sure that the precedence isn't there, because I have individuals saying that I have a tree I'd like to have the city maintain, and I just call them up and I've contacted the Department of Public Works and said, it is your responsibility of taking care of that tree.
But this time, the ordinance succeeded.
There are things that are important that sometimes supersede private property rights.
In this case, it pleased the parrots and a property owner who worked with the city. But in 3 years, the debate will resume. For now, San Francisco celebrated parrots will continue to live in their comfortable cypress homes. This is Rob Krieger for CNS News.
That's it for tonight. From the entire crew here at the Graduate School of Journalism at Berkeley, thanks for watching. To view our previous shows, just go to cnstv.org. I'm Nick Bonovich, and we'll see you next time.